There were loud cheers in the House of Commons as MPs voted to support an amendment to put pressure on the government to reform Northern Ireland's laws on abortion and same-sex marriage. The Northern Ireland Bill was debated at Westminster last night. It doesn't end the near total ban on abortion or end the ban on same-sex marriage. Instead, it focuses on issuing guidance to increase accountability of the Northern Ireland Secretary over her role in ensuring human rights compliance. This is the moment when Stella Creasy announced the vote.
Eyes to the right, 207. The noes to the left, 117.
Yeah. Earlier, this was part of the argument that she had put up during the debate.
When it comes to abortion, we know that right now in Northern Ireland, if you are raped and you become pregnant as a result of that attack and you seek a termination, you could face a longer prison sentence than your attacker. So too, we know that gay couples in Northern Ireland, when they step off the plane, no longer have their relationship respected in the way that any of us would wish for our relationship to be respected.
And this was the case against from the DUP MP, Emma Pengelly.
This is a hugely controversial issue. Regardless of what you think of my views about this, you must objectively accept it is a controversial issue in Northern Ireland. And this amendment has been tagged onto the back of a bill going through this House by accelerated passage. And the very fact that I'm standing up here with just a couple of minutes to make these points emphasises that this is the wrong way to do this.
Our political editor Mark Devenport with us this morning. So what's happening? What does this actually do? What does it mean, Mark?
Well, I think the first thing to emphasise is that it doesn't mean that overnight suddenly abortion has become legal in Northern Ireland or same-sex marriage has become legal in Northern Ireland. The two MPs behind this, Stella Creasy and Conor McGinn, actually had an amendment which was a bit more radical, which would have repealed some of the older laws that do criminalise abortion here and do ban same-sex marriage. But they withdrew that, presumably because they thought it might be ruled out of the scope of this bill. And instead, the amendment that did succeed last night requires the Secretary of State, Karen Bradley, to provide guidance to Northern Ireland departments on how they should exercise their functions given the incompatibility of the current law here with human rights standards. So that's somewhat vaguer. It just requires the Secretary of State to on, I think, a quarterly basis, provide this guidance. And, you know, so it could be that we could, for some time, be in a bit of a paper exercise. But those who were behind this bill saw it as an important sort of sign of the direction of movement.
Yeah, so, and politicians are often use that phrase, don't they? Direction of travel, direction of movement, and it means diddly squat. Does this actually mean anything?
Well, I think in the immediate short term, probably no, because, I mean, Karen Bradley has been asked to provide this guidance, and we can reflect on how long it's taken Karen Bradley and her predecessors at the Northern Ireland office to do much about the devolution standoff at Stormont and wonder whether they'll be any more radical in terms of the kind of guidance and paperwork that they provide in relation to this. But obviously, it's putting a bit more pressure on her to enter into a situation in which she's very reluctant. The current position, I think, goes back to June, when the Supreme Court effectively said that our law in relation to abortion was incompatible with human rights, but didn't make any kind of formal declaration. That was because the case was lost on a technicality. Basically, it was decided that the Human Rights Commission, which was taking the case, wasn't an actual victim and therefore didn't have any particular authority to bring this case. So that case is going to be run all over again with Sarah Ewart, who you've talked to many times, who, of course, was herself very much affected by the whole ban on abortion in relation to cases of fetal abnormality. She's now kind of rerunning that case, so it might take some time to come through the courts. But, you know, I think what the campaigners here are trying to do is to draw the Northern Ireland office more proactively into what's a very sort of difficult grey area where it would appear that the laws here are incompatible, but no one's particularly doing anything to change them.
I wonder, Mark, does this mean that if someone wanted to go to court and say that their human rights were breached, that the fact that this guidance has been voted through a democratic process, mean that that would strengthen their case?
Well, of course, we don't yet know what the guidance will say and how the lawyers acting on behalf of the Northern Ireland office will tiptoe through this very controversial territory. But obviously, you know, people will be focusing on that, seeing what they do say in terms of guidance to the likes of the health department or so on. I suspect it probably won't change the fundamental argument about the laws. We'll see that Sarah Ewart case come forward, and we'll see whether the court at the highest level declares the laws here formally to be incompatible with human rights. But at the moment, I think it's more a case of, you know, what's coming down the line. We do know that there have been various other attempts to fundamentally change the law here, to remove, for instance, the Victorian law, which criminalises abortion, and also to change the laws in relation to same-sex marriage. I think this is maybe just a political step in that direction rather than anything that is going to change anything in the coming months.
OK, Mark Devenport, thank you very much. Indeed. Morning to you, Mark. The anti-abortion campaigner Bernie Smith is with us this morning. Bernie, morning to you.
Good morning.
Morning, and Grainne Taggart from Amnesty International. Morning, Grainne.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are you worried about this, Bernie?
No, because I think it's very clear that we're not going to be seeing a change in the law. And in fact, we're back to square one. Precious Life have been involved in the court arguments over and the cases over the last number of years, and I think we're back to square one concerning that. But let me pick up on one particular point that Mark Devenport drew attention to. The fact of that Supreme Court, there was a unanimous agreement that the law is in fact compatible with human rights in the cases of non-fatal disabilities. Lord Kerr had said that the children born with disabilities, even grave disabilities, lead happy and fulfilled lives. And it was their opinion that in the cases of a child with a so-called life-limiting disability that cannot be defined, clearly their opinion had said that in this particular case that our laws were incompatible with human rights. But that's in a very, very low percentage of pregnancies. So I think clearly we need to look at this, and it was their opinion, and this is why they couldn't overrule previous court cases that said that the courts didn't have a right to make decisions regarding abortion legislation, because in fact there is no international human rights laws that recognise the right to abortion.
Grainne?
I mean, what we've witnessed there last night is a very clear landslide majority of support at Westminster for change here. Mark's absolutely right. No, it doesn't change the law. But if you put it in the context of the vote that happened on Tuesday as well, where Diana Johnson, Labour MP, brought forward a bill to decriminalise abortion, that received co-sponsors from almost every UK political party.
But not from Northern Ireland.
Including the party in government, the Conservative Party. Now, there's very clear a direction of travel, as you mentioned, at Westminster here, where they recognise the harm being caused by the inequity here, either with abortion laws or with laws and not having same-sex marriage recognised. And that they're clearly of the mind that they will move on this. Now, Diana Johnson's bill...
I wonder where the DUP will be in all of this, because, of course, they've been saying most recently about Brexit and things that Northern Ireland can't be any different than the rest of the UK.
Well, I mean, they're clearly selective about when that applies. And it's very interesting, actually, Emma's comments last night, where she has said that this is obviously a controversial issue in Northern Ireland. No doubt people obviously have very strongly held views, but it's not contentious amongst the Northern Ireland public. We know exactly where they are on this issue. You know, our very recent poll there published a couple of weeks ago showed that 65% of people in Northern Ireland don't think abortion should be a crime, and that 66% believe that in the absence of a devolved government that Westminster should reform the law. So very clearly the public are behind the reform that Diana Johnson and Stella Creasy and others are seeking with this. So it was very encouraging to have 2 days of significant wins at Westminster. It's also worth mentioning that, particularly with the Diana Johnson bill, and I think again it applied last night, that you have ministers in government who are voting in support of this change. So, for example, Penny Mordaunt, who's the Women and Equalities Minister, that is obviously very significant. There are clearly conversations happening around the Cabinet table on this. I mean, she would not be going into the Yes lobby to vote in support of this bill without actually having conversations with her colleagues. Likewise, Victoria Atkins, who is the Minister for Women. So it's very clear that not only are attitudes at Westminster that change needs to happen, but also we see that amongst political opinion here. I mean, if we look at the joint statement that Amnesty and FPA coordinated that was published in September, that was signed by Michelle O'Neill, Colm Eastwood individually, but obviously he's leader of the SDLP, Naomi Long, again on an individual basis, and the UUP Justice Spokesperson Doug Beattie. That statement called on the UK government to decriminalise abortion. So that there, what we're also saying is that our parties here recognise that Westminster should be moving on this.
Okay, Bernie?
Well, I would dispute everything that has been said there, because when we talk about opinion polls, well, you know, we could throw opinion polls back and forward based on the fact that most of them are, you know, gathered information from over just over 1,000 people. We can say that even recently we collected a petition of 15,000 people in Northern Ireland, real people who have a conversation about abortion and about the right to life of unborn children, who are willing to sign postcards. And at this moment, there is another campaign.
Well, this was a survey, was it? Created by yourselves?
No, yes. And also that you, when you talk
asking
about
these polls,
who creates these polls? Should an unborn
asking
child be protected? A personhood campaign calling for an unborn child to be protected from the moment of conception throughout the whole 9 months. That covers all aspects of life-limiting disabilities, the hard cases of rape.
Was that spelled out to people
cases,
in the survey?
That is spelled out in all those cases. And in fact,
in the question that you asked in the survey, did you spell out the different scenarios?
Yes, absolutely.
And how did the results differ
in
each scenario?
The people were very freely signing these postcards, as they are at the moment, asking for the democratic process to be respected.
What percentage voted against what you were asking? What you wanted them to say?
There was no percentage.
No
in
percentage.
Reality,
nobody disagreed with you.
Well, let me bring you up to speed with what
nobody,
happened.
Nobody was for abortion. You didn't bump into, during your survey,
very
you didn't
few,
bump into anybody
few.
Who wanted abortion.
Stephen, if you let me maybe answer as you
sure.
did, let me finish the question. You've already
sure.
let
but, that, but you're putting, you're put, well, Bernie, the reason I'm doing this, and of course I'll let you answer, but we need to be careful here because you're putting out a suggestion that when you did a survey and you're putting store and stock and import into that survey, and you're then suggesting that you didn't bump into anybody in Northern Ireland who
no,
was against your view.
That, Stephen, you suggested that I had said that I have collected, we have collected, and in fact, let's look.
So it wasn't a survey then,
responses.
That's a petition.
Let us look at the responses. I didn't say a survey, you did, Stephen, I said petition. In April 2015, it was revealed that over 99% of those responding to the Justice Minister at that time, David Ford, consultation and changing the law to allow abortion in cases of life-limiting disabilities and sexual crime, over 25% or 25,000, which was 99% of those who responded, were opposed to a change in the law. In 2016, the Northern Ireland Assembly at that time opposed, as you well know, I was in your studio at the time, and it was very clear that the government at that time was opposed to it. When you talk about what's happening in Westminster, over 97% of the MPs at Westminster do not speak for the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland. So I think we're seeing a push from Westminster that is not representative of the people of Northern Ireland here. So when we compare polls of over 1,000 people, how can we take that seriously when we have evidence over 300,000 various different petitions
okay,
over various different campaigns say the opposite. No, it's not about. It's not that. It's a fact that the people in Northern Ireland do not want to see the killing of unborn children introduced into Northern Ireland. What they want to see is better care and support for women
Grania?
In crisis pregnancies and women with life-threatening disabilities.
Grania?
Okay, so there's several points there I want to address. First of all, the one around the Department of Justice consultation. I mean, going back to 2015, if we want to go that far back, I mean, that's just another nonsense. I mean, the results of that are online for anyone
yes,
to see.
Are.
Not only was there a proper support for a reform in those circumstances of sexual crime and FFA, but also all the medical bodies, etc., were all there, including the various Royal Colleges, saying that this change needed to happen. We've subsequently then had a report that was commissioned by the DUP then around abortion in cases of fatal abnormality. And again, there was a recommendation to the change in the law. On the 2016 vote, again, we have to consider again where things were then, where they are now. We have had two Assembly elections. The landscape of the Northern Ireland Assembly has completely changed. And also some of those who voted against were those who were concerned about an amendment being tagged to a bill and it not having been given proper consideration.
Can I just, Neil, we talked about facts earlier on. Can I just look at the facts over this this petition, Bernie, that you suggested had 300,000 signatures?
Yes.
In fact, it wasn't a petition. Minister has said that a petition by anti-abortion groups claiming 300,000 signatures actually consisted of several petitions collected over a 12-year period.
But sure, I've made that clear.
So that's over 12 years.
And the point that I was proving in that presentation was there was no change of opinion from the people. Every opportunity...
But it could have had the same people signing those different petitions
That would be entirely up to those who would dispute that, to check those petitions because they're freely available.
They were with the
Department of Justice for a period of weeks. But it was very clear that time and time again, irregardless of those who signed the signatures, the results were the same.
Do you believe
that there is a strong opinion of opposition against any change in the law in Northern Ireland, Stephen?
We're back to this conundrum again, aren't we? If you look at the DUP's position on Brexit, where they say the referendum wasn't a Northern Ireland-only poll because, of course, the majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain in the EU. So you've got the likes of the DUP saying, but it was a UK-wide poll, which it was, and they're right to say that. And then when there are potentially different rules for Northern Ireland with the EU, the DUP say they will not tolerate any difference from the rest of the UK, and the UK and Northern Ireland needs to have exactly the same position as the UK. But then same breath, when we talk about abortion or indeed same-sex marriage, the DUP say, but we in Northern Ireland have a right to be different.
No, but what they're right. I mean, it's
they would say those are social issues, those are devolved issues, but you can
see... No, they're life and death issues, Stephen. That's the reality. This is why they want to protect...
You can see how some other people might wonder if there is a little bit...
of hypocrisy, absolutely. And actually, if we look at where the DUP, their electorate, are in this issue, they also favour change. Because any time we have commissioned a poll which has been independently carried out, we always ask people, how do you vote? And actually, whilst the difference is marginal, it always comes out that those who vote DUP are actually more marginally supportive than those who vote Sinn Féin. But there's a clear majority across voters of all of the political parties. So the DUP, I think, would need to pay heed to where their own electorate are on this issue. And it is not along the lines of what Emma had stood up in the House of Commons last night and said. Let's consider also, because you raised the point about the rest of the UK, where are the rest of the UK on this? Because we also asked them, 81% think that our abortion law should be reformed, and 85% think that women should be able to access services in Northern Ireland without having to travel. 78% agree that abortion should be decriminalised. That is what Westminster is looking at the minute. It is looking at decriminalising abortion so that we no longer treat women who need this healthcare as criminals.
I am interested in our callers this morning, their opinion on what I'm about to put to them. If you are a unionist and a Brexiteer, and if you feel that Northern Ireland being given different status than the rest of the UK would threaten the union, because we've heard this being said for many, many weeks now, then how does it not threaten the union for us to have different abortion laws, for us to have different same-sex marriage legislation? How does that not threaten the union? So how would a different tax rate in Northern Ireland, a different customs regime in Northern Ireland, threaten the union any more than someone from the rest of the UK, a human being being able to get married if they're gay, but they come to Northern Ireland, they're a unionist and they can't? How does one threaten the union more than the other? And I'd really like your opinion on that this morning. 03030 80 55 55. Peter in Belfast. Morning, Peter.
Well, what I find strange is, Stephen, every time a folk goes for somebody that's great what Britain does in this, You know, and I'm not going to go back to what you said about Brexit. You know, the vote in Britain, UK, was to leave. So why are people fighting against it? And if we have different rules, we'll have different rules. I'm all for abortion and anybody else that needs it under certain circumstances. But at the end of the day, there is methods to stop you getting pregnant, which is a little pill. So I don't understand
Not, Peter, if you've been raped, there's not.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. So if you're raped or if you've been abused, yes, you're entitled. Yes, I agree 100%.
You agree with abortion in those circumstances, do you?
Yes, but not like a cosmetic, you know, maybe some girls have had 4 and 5. You know what? I think there's...
4 and 5 what?
Abortions. Yeah, there's probably girls that have 4 or 5 abortions. So why not just stop it from happening? You know what I mean? It's easy done. You know what I mean? I put my seatbelt on so I don't hurt myself if I crash. You know, so it's the same way, you know.
Grania?
I mean, it's just nonsense. I mean, no woman uses abortion, obviously, as a form of contraception. No woman takes the decision to terminate a pregnancy lightly. And we can't get
why
into...
Why does she not take it lightly? Why doesn't she take it lightly? Because we can see the rising number of abortions in the UK, and many of them, women are having multiple abortions. Underground C, which is a very liberal piece of legislation, the legislation of the 1967 Act, 98% are underground C. So most women can have an abortion just because they want to have an abortion for any reason at any time up to 24 weeks. So the reality is what this caller has really said. Why is abortion difficult for women? Because abortion takes the life of an unborn child and it leads to long-term medical and psychological effects on that woman.
No, because let's consider, for example, a woman who has other children. I mean, there will be a number of factors that she will take into consideration, including whether or not she wants to continue and grow her family. So this old nonsense about, you know, women... because the issue of abortion itself is difficult. Women recognise this as a form of healthcare. For some women, they obviously want this choice.
Okay.
Now, it is healthcare.
It's certainly not.
Women
not recognised.
17
okay.
alone.
Here's Fred in Lisburn.
To England for the service.
Morning, Fred.
But not because they had any health problems.
Thank you, Bernie. Morning, Fred.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good
morning. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I actually sat and watched quite a lot of the debate last night. Emma Little Pingelly spoke extremely well when she said about the report that is sitting, waiting to be debated, and there's no one to debate it. However, I'm a Brexiteer. I am not a DUP voter. What I will say is the DUP used language like red lines here. They cannot pick and choose and cherry pick what part of UK law they want and what part they don't want. The same as other parties cannot use red lines to discuss this. If parties cannot agree it should be agreed in law to bring us in line with the UK.
Well, of course, it's the parties that have the control over legislation in Northern Ireland, isn't it?
It is, yes. Whilst they are acting sensibly and...
Well, there's the thing. If they can get themselves back into government, they might have some type of power to create legislation. Fred, thank you. Edward and Lauren. Morning, Edward.
Good morning to you, Steve. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
All right. I don't fully understand how it would affect the... That's the Person Act law would affect the Constitution or the Union. But what I would say, you know, people are wanting this brought into law. Well, you see, I'm looking at it from a born-again Christian point of view, and you see, I believe abortion is actually murder, and God's law says that, and against God's law, I believe there is no law can overrule God's law.
Really?
Yeah.
So you think that non-Christians and all of those people who have a right, presumably, that you would support not to believe in God, they should have to follow God's law, even if they don't think God exists?
Well, no, I was thinking for myself here, just. I'm not saying what they
yes,
should
but
believe.
But law can't apply to you and not other people.
Right, no, it applies to me, and it should apply to everybody.
Even if they don't believe in God?
Well, the Bible's there, it's our mandate for life.
For everybody?
It says they shall not kill.
Yes.
And I would stand upon that.
Well, of course you would. And I get that, Edward. But do you think God's law should be imposed on people who don't believe?
I was given to everybody. Whether they want to adhere to it or not, that's a matter for them. But that was given, that law was given to everybody.
Okay. Okay, I'm Brian in West Belfast. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, am I right? Am I wrong? That debate in Parliament.
Yep.
Am I right in saying that no matter what they pass, it didn't pass or anything, but it still has to go to the Assembly here, devolved government, to anything to happen here has to be a devolved government.
There's no Assembly. Right? It's no devolved government.
I'm saying if there was a devolved government...
Can I ask you this? Sorry to go off... Yes, okay, sorry. Of course, of course.
Well, all I'm saying is, whatever they
I'm
say...
I'm too excitable this morning.
And we are. If there was an evolved... If there wasn't a devolved government here... Yes. It has to go there to be passed. Am I right?
Yes.
No matter what... So that debate last night, what I'm saying is, it's a waste of time. The only thing that has to happen is a devolved government. As far as I know, all the parties now want to get rid of the petition of concern, which means...
Well,
and they're
do
all.
They?
Well,
do
as far as I'm listening to your programme every day, Stephen, and this last, many years.
I think you'd need to test the DUP on that. They don't speak to me anymore, Brian. But I think you'd need to test the DUP on that. I'm not sure the DUP do want to.
They've said
they want to get rid of the petition of concern.
Stephen, I remember on your programme, I can't remember who was on, they said they have no problem. They have no problem at all with
it. They used the petition of concern to block gay marriage.
They all use it. And before I come off the line here, can I say something?
I want to ask you a question now.
Go ahead.
You mentioned devolved government and an assembly. And I'd like to ask you all this morning, actually, as we go off on a tangent. Obviously, this is not about abortion or indeed gay marriage. Do you think we're coming anywhere close to even the prospect of an assembly being restored in Northern Ireland? Or do you think we're getting further away? Is there even a hint of a possibility?
The DUP and Sinn Féin have no interest in devolved government here. They have no interest.
I just wonder, for all of you that you know, you're thinking about the life around you, and this is about roads and education and health. Those are all devolved matters. Those are all matters where you could have a local minister making decisions and being locally accountable for it. Do you think there's any prospect of a local government coming back?
No. No.
And by the way, Brian, I think you were right in that the DUP have said it's a bit of a mixed bag. The DUP have said they'd be happy to get rid of a petition of concern, but while the present structures exist, they will continue to use it. So what does that mean?
Yeah. Can I have a wee quick comment to Bernie there, please?
Yes, but Keith's waiting and he gets itchy.
Bernie, women can walk, they can think, they can talk, and they've got a mind. They can think for themselves. That's all. They can think.
And unborn children can't talk for themselves.
I'm just saying, to
help the unborn. And I respect
women
by helping them. But I respect the fact that... Yes, but it's not their bodies that are being aborted. It's unborn children who are individual, unique human beings. So let's be clear about that.
But you're trying to dictate...
Just clarify that comment.
I'm trying to be a voice for the unborn child who has no voice.
What I wanted to say was women have... They're not a different species on this earth. They have a mind. They have a body. They can think for themselves what they want to do.
And many women are being deceived with the facts. And the reality is the unborn child in the mother's womb is an individual, unique human being who needs to be protected as well. And we need to provide better help and support for those women in crisis pregnancy.
All right, Brian, Bernie, Gráinne, thank you.